Welcome to the Clear Admit MBA Admissions Podcast. I'm Graham Richmond, and today we're going to talk about something that I'm hoping everyone listening needs to figure out, and that is how to pay for business school. I know that many of you right now have been getting word about round one, or maybe you're going to be applying in round two, and soon enough, hopefully you'll be juggling some different acceptance letters and turning your attention towards paying for business school, or even towards other things like getting health insurance for while you're in business school, or all these kind of expense side things that you have to deal with that you probably haven't been thinking about very much. Again, I'm not an expert, but I have really the good fortune to know Nikhil Agarwal and Chris Abkarians, who are the founders of Juno. They also both graduated from HBS, and they've joined me today to talk about student loans and what Juno, their company, does in terms of helping to negotiate loans for MBA candidates and other areas too. So welcome, Chris. Welcome, Nikhil.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks very much for having us on today.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. So just to give our listeners a bit of background, Nikhil, you graduated from HBS just this past spring, so class of 2020. You went to undergrad at University of Illinois Urbana. And I guess I remember reading you'd done aerospace engineering, worked for Boeing for a while, and then kind of started up Juno, which used to be called Leverage, in case some of our listeners remember that. And then did your, kind of couple years at HBS and are now full time on Juno. Chris, just so our listeners know, you also went to HBS, right? Class of 2020. Did your undergrad at Duke,
right,
in political science and public policy. And I remember from a prior conversation that we had that you did some strategy consulting, but then also ended up at Netflix doing content strategy. And so you've got this kind of media background. And I guess you guys got together heading into your time at HBS and launched Juno. And I wanted to know, the first question I had for you, Chris, if you'll start here, is I wanted to know, where did this idea come from? Because I'm probably not even doing it justice in describing it, but you guys have kind of disrupted the student loan space. And I think it's really important for our listeners to understand how you came up with this idea and what you're doing exactly.
Yeah, thanks a lot for that intro. I actually think that this first question is one best suited for Nikhil, because he's actually the one who helped push this over the finish line when we first came up with the idea.
I think Chris might be giving me a little bit too much credit over there, but happy to share the story. We both got into HBS and was super excited, of course, and then the bill came, right? The moment you were just describing for the listeners, that moment came and we were trying to figure out how to pay for it. We were in this group chat full of admitted students talking about, how we were going to pay for it, when a student from Israel actually mentioned, they use this sort of concept of group buying almost every year in getting their student loans. So Chris and I teamed up, decided, okay, let's give this a shot in the United States, got a group together, and just basically went door to door to all the different banks that would hear us and try to negotiate a discount. The end of that summer was quite successful. We ended up helping our classmates with over $25 million of loans, saving each person more than $15,000 each. And all of this, rolled into what ultimately became Juno 5 or 6 months down the road, when Chris and I finally met on campus and decided we want to be co-founders and make this sort of available for, all generations of students after us.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I mean, just it seems like such a simple idea, right? This the power of a group of people wanting a product or service, in this case, a loan. Can you tell us a little bit, either Chris or Nikhil, I don't know, Chris, if you want to tackle this one, a little bit about, how's it been going? Like some facts and figures. So especially on the MBA side, I know you guys are doing loans in multiple markets now, but can you tell us a little bit about who's using this and how's it been going in terms of these negotiations and getting together a large group to get these kinds of great deals?
Yeah, great question. So we've been really happy about how it's gone over the last, 2.5 years now. Over the lifetime that we've been doing this, we've helped people get more than $250 million of loans. This past year, looking at MBAs specifically. We helped people get nearly $100 million of loans at the absolute cheapest rates on the market. And looking forward to next year, we've kind of grown from this initial group of about 700 people when we did this pre-HBS to about 35,000 members. And what we've seen very consistently is as we grow interest in these buying groups, it just becomes that much easier to negotiate lower rates and better terms. And so we're just pretty laser focused right now on trying to continue expanding the size and the scope of the number of students who express interest in what we do.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds to me, I remember seeing on the website that you don't even have to give like a social security number or anything. You just give your email and I guess, you know, indicate that you've been accepted to a program and that you need, you know, to get a loan and stuff. And then you kind of, I guess you all take that information and get negotiating. So it seems really simple. I feel like, I mean, how long does it take to sign up, Chris, if someone wants to get signed up and get their name into the hat, basically?
It can take you as little as 30 seconds and up to 2 minutes. Okay. So the way that we try to run this is to make it a no-brainer to sign up. Mm-hmm. And so if you want to just be kept up to date on what we're doing, you can go on our site, joinjuno.com, and just enter your name and your email, and we'll just send you regular updates on how the negotiations are going and send you a link to whatever deals you've negotiated a few months down the road. And if you want to help us improve the quality of the pool, then we just ask you to optionally include some more information like where you're going to school, your graduation year, how much you want to borrow, and a few other factors about yourself. And we don't ever use any of that information except for when we do negotiate with lenders, which typically happens in February. It helps to give them a sense for the dollar amount that we're negotiating and the distribution of schools that people are at. And so we just roll up that information, show them some pretty charts that we'll put together and get them really bought into the concept that, hey, this group of top tier MBA students is really low risk. They're a majority of the people in this group, and we believe that they can and should be getting lower interest rate loans.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, it's really, so if you're listening to this podcast and you haven't already run over to join Juno and signed up, I think it's just something that you should do because at minimum, you'll be kept in the loop about the rates that these guys are working on for you. And at most, you could, you know, give them a little more information and help them get a lower rate. So it seems like a no-brainer. I guess I do want to step back for a second, though, because I want to give some practical advice to people listening about financing an MBA. And so I wondered if you could give our listeners just some basic background on student loans for business school, like even some simple stuff like what are people borrowing on average? And I know it probably varies a great deal, but, you know, what does it look like? People take out a loan. Then they have to start paying it back at some point. What are we talking about in terms of like how much money someone ends up having to pay back on a monthly basis once they're out of business school? So some of these like background details that I think would be helpful to someone who's looking at some offers now and is realizing that they got to get their head around, as Nikhil really said it earlier, like the price tag, you know, and figuring out how to finance it and what that's going to mean over the long term.
Yeah, good question. So I'm going to give you some high level stats first. So for the past three academic years that we've been working on this, the average loan per year has hovered between $60,000 and $65,000. Most people tend to go for a 10-year payback period, and the typical interest rate is somewhere around 5%. And so that structure of a loan would result in a monthly payment after school of about $600 a month. Now, before you even get to the size of a loan that you'd be taking out, one thing I would call out just right now is we've seen a lot of success for people trying to negotiate the amount of financial aid that they get from schools. And so the first step in the process is you kind of think through what you want to do after you've gotten that admissions letter. And by the way, congratulations to everybody who's been admitted over the past couple of weeks and everybody who will be over the next few months. The first thing you want to do is make sure that you fill out your school's financial aid application. regardless of whether you think you're going to qualify or not, because sometimes you'll be surprised by what you'll qualify for. You fill that out at Math 3 you get in typically, and a couple of weeks later you'll hear back from the school. And there's a lot of opportunities there to make sure that you maximize the amount of financial aid that that school is willing to give to you. We've seen people pretty successfully negotiate for larger amounts of aid by saying, hey, I got into this other school also, and they're giving me more aid. I'd really like to attend your school, but I need a little bit more help to make the numbers work. And those kinds of tactics are ones that we encourage people to use as often as they can, because if you're not asking for it, odds are that somebody else in your class is going to be asking for it, and they'll get it instead of you.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And I would say, anecdotally, watching the data on clearadmit.com and the Decision Wire posts where people indicate where they got in and how much financial aid they've been given, those numbers have crept up over the years. So you're absolutely right. There seems to be more financial aid out there for students to go after. And I think, you know, if you don't ask, if you've got an acceptance letter and you don't ask for a bit more, you'll never know, yeah. Right? And there's no harm. I think as long as a candidate is asking in a polite way, and I always recommend that people do it in writing, like send an email, you know, that indicates that you, like you said, you know, you've got a couple of acceptances, maybe a little more money here, but you want to go there. What can they do? The worst they can say is no. So I think that's really good advice. But after that, you still need to probably borrow money in most cases, right, to finance. And so it sounds like what you're saying, that figure that you cited earlier, I think what you said 60 or 65,000, is that the total that someone borrows, or is that actually per year? So they're really borrowing like double that on a two-year MBA program.
So that's actually per year. You're right that most people are, at least the average person that we've seen now across many thousands of people, is borrowing about $60,000 per year.
Okay.
And I know that sounds daunting right now, but relative to the amount of money that the median person makes after graduation, it's a pretty manageable amount.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's something that I feel like even here at ClearAdmit, we're constantly reminding people of, you know, what they're going to make after business school, and to not let, you know, the sticker price scare them away. You know, sometimes we see people saying, oh, I got a free ride at a, you know, local university. Why would I spend all the money to go to a top five MBA program? And it's like, because you're going to make a lot of money post MBA and you can pay it back. And that's why, frankly, I don't think these loans would be available to top tier candidates at such low rates if they weren't a good bet.
Exactly.
Right? So, proof is right there. Okay. So any advice on, like, well, actually, I wanted to just, while we're on this subject, I want to know, is there anything else that you guys are doing? Because I know that I've seen on the website, you're doing some other things besides negotiating these great rates for MBA student loans. Like, I know that you've taken this model and applied it to like even health insurance, right? So can you talk about some of these other things that you're doing?
Yeah. So two things I'll mention that are, I think, more applicable to this audience are for international students coming to the U.S. to study, we've actually started now a health insurance company. So what we realize is there's a lot of different health insurance options for international students studying in the U.S. Some of them have very different pricing to offer very similar coverage. And so we've gone through a process over the course of the last several months, led by an international student at Wharton who's now on our team, to kind of replicate this process, find the lowest overall rates, and find the most coverage for those rates. And so that's something that we just started rolling out. Would recommend anybody who might need that product to check it out and compare it to your alternative options. And the second thing that we just started doing is trying to create a market for international students to be able to refinance their loans after they graduate. So the most common requests we get from people are from international students who are studying and getting their MBAs in the US and want to get lower rates on their student loans. And although we haven't been able to do too much on that front yet, we are focusing on trying to make sure that international students have an option to be able to refinance their loans after they graduate. Because all of the US-based students do. Like, I'm about to refinance my student loans from 5% down to about 3%. And I think it would be great if a bunch of our classmates are able to do the same thing.
Yeah, that makes sense. I guess what's the reason that those rates go down? Is it because you're an even safer bet now that you've kind of completed the degree? Or like, what is it that interest rates have moved? Or like, what drives that kind of lower rate?
Good question. It's a combination of both. But it is actually primarily driven by you being a much lower credit risk typically when you've graduated.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. I guess once you've actually finished the program, so that's like the biggest hurdle is out of the way. Okay, that makes sense. So I guess, is there any advice on a timeline or framework for thinking about financing an MBA? So, or even, for getting health insurance as an international or other like pre-MBA tasks? Like I know people listening, many of them may be, as I mentioned earlier, sitting on some acceptance letters that they just received, and they may want to kick back, which I certainly they should do. It's going to be the holidays soon, and it's kind of, they deserve kind of to celebrate the results. But at what point do people need to kind of get off their butts and start really working on this stuff so that they don't end up, in June realizing that they can't make their payments and that they need to kind of negotiate a loan and stuff?
So you're absolutely right. First, celebrate, enjoy the fact that you've gotten in and relax a little bit. I know the process up until this point can be a little bit stressful. I would say work backwards from Feb 15th. And the reason I say that is, as long as somebody signs up on Juno before February 15th, we view that as like an optimal outcome. On February 15th, we engage in negotiations with a bunch of different banks, and we try to create the best suite of products for the next academic year. And so if somebody just as simply, like after you get in at some point, take 2 minutes to just go on, join Juno, let us know what school you got into your grad year, and a rough estimate of how much you think you might want to borrow. We'll do all the work from there on figuring out where the lowest possible rates are. And we'll just send you some updates about where to go find those when the time comes.
Okay. And would the same be true for like the health insurance product or even if someone's interested in, refinancing? I guess that's different because refinancing would be, after they've completed. But is the timeline similar for the health insurance product, or is that different?
So on the health insurance product, that's typically something that varies from school to school. So some programs will require you to have your health insurance secured by a particular date. Some will require you to have it before you even travel to the United States. And so the way that product for us is set up is there is an option that's available for people to use at any day of the year. And as soon as your school tells you that you have to go get something, or as soon as you're in the US and you're going to actually need the product, we'd recommend just going on our site, signing up, and checking out how the options that we've negotiated compare to the alternatives that your school might be offering you directly.
Okay. Did you time that perfectly to have an ambulance go by as we were talking about the healthcare stuff?
Didn't even notice that.
So the other thing I wanted to know, and this is really for both of you, I really wanted to know, you went to HBS and you got Juno off the ground. I mean, you had started it obviously because you met and were figuring this all out before you started business school, but you did a lot of the legwork and kind of formalizing this business and getting it going while students in the MBA program. And I know that a lot of folks listening to this podcast have kind of entrepreneurial aspirations. And I think one of the key factors that weighs on someone's mind is, could I pursue an entrepreneurial dream right away, so that I'm like literally setting up a business while in business school, or at least doing the business plan for it and just going for it as soon as I graduate? Or should I take the safe route and go, do consulting or something more traditional and become an entrepreneur in 5 years or 10 years down the road? So what like advice do you have for people? Because, I mean, you guys really took the leap. What was the MBA experience like because of that? Because it must be really different. So maybe, Nikhil, do you want to speak to that a little bit? And then, Chris, you can chime in.
Yeah, I'm a huge proponent of sort of taking the entrepreneurial path first if that's a itch that you have, right? It's, I think, sort of looking forward, it's difficult to see someone who's, you know, gotten into big tech or consulting make the change. Yes, there are plenty of people who make the change, but I think the sort of friction and the sort of motivation you need to have to make the change at that point is so much greater than sort of giving it a shot right now. And the other thing is just sort of the ecosystem that's available to you while you are at HBS, and I'm sure it's similar at other top business schools, to get something off the ground is phenomenal, right? There's sort of this network of people around you, be it professors, venture capitalists, other students, they all are supportive of you just because you are there and you're a student. So, you know, you need every edge you can get when you're trying to get an entrepreneurial venture off the ground, and that certainly helps.
Chris, how about you?
I would strongly echo what Nikhil just said. There's a lot of opportunity to, there's probably no lower risk time to try something than while you're at business school. Even if you try something entrepreneurial and you fail, which sure, most people do, I think you're going to be better off trying to get an awesome job somewhere a few months after that happens than if you didn't do that at all. And so I kind of view it as it's not a trade-off. You're actually still materially improving your resume and your value to a future employer if you do try something entrepreneurial. If it works, amazing. You don't have to work for somebody else again. And if it doesn't, then I think a lot of people will respect you more for having tried it. And so it is pretty low risk for you to do it. It shouldn't be thought of as just a trade-off between if I do this, then I can't do consulting, or I can't do banking, or I can't do something else. I would view it as this will make me that much more likely to be able to have a job that I really enjoy doing after I graduate.
Yeah, well said. I think, Nikhil, to your point, you got me thinking about how there's that ecosystem in place, and actually the schools, and this is not just HBS, but I did a podcast not too long ago with some faculty over at Duke who were specialized in, you know, entrepreneurship, and they were talking about, they have this like vested interest in the success of their student entrepreneurs, like people who, you know, they want to be able to say, like, HBS wants to be able to talk about what you guys did, and Duke wants to be able to talk about what their students have done. And so I think there's a definite vested interest. And so they're rooting for you. And it's not like they're just providing you a platform and the right, you know, resources. They're literally, it feels like, at least to me, looking from the outside in, that schools, they want to be able to kind of show off the fact that they've got all these students who've gone on and done entrepreneurial ventures and had success. So I think it's a really great point that it's kind of a low risk time, and you've got a lot of things in place that can help increase the odds of success. But turning back to Juno, I wanted to know, again, for these folks listening who are about to accept an offer or maybe mulling it over and eventually, you know, in the coming weeks are going to pick a school, is there any other advice that you all have for them? So, Chris, anything you wanted to share that someone should be thinking about as they embark on the MBA journey and go from applicant to student?
If you're choosing between multiple schools, it's going to feel really stressful for the next couple of weeks, but I just wouldn't worry about it nearly as much. I think Nikhil and I were both in those shoes, and that felt like the most stressful thing to figure out after the application process was over. But everybody we know, regardless of where they've gone, is equally happy and successful right now. So I know a lot of people will say that, but it's just fundamentally very true. The things that I would focus on now, after you figure out where you want to go, is what you're probably going to do anyway, which is just start meeting as many of your classmates as you can before you even get to campus, and relax as much as you can before class starts back up. Because once it does, it's going to be a complete and total whirlwind.
And Nikhil, any advice that you have?
Yeah, I wanted to build on a point Chris made. I don't know if it's discussed often, because it's like a nice problem to have, right? Being able to select between a few schools, and it does feel extremely stressful. And I think it's maybe the advice or therapist advice I'm trying to give here is like, it's okay that it's stressful and you might not be able to share this emotion with a ton of people in your immediate surroundings, right? Where they don't have that option, but you know, it's still something you want to think through for yourself, and that's completely okay. So feel comfortable in that very important decision you have to make, and don't worry that it's a decision you're making from a fortunate position. But yeah, after that, sort of you know, agree with Chris in terms of getting to know your classmates is one of the best things you can do. I'm still envious of Chris for going on Yacht Week, and I missed it. So, but there are plenty of other ways as well to sort of get to know your classmates, from just sort of the groups that get put together before school. You know, being active in those, trying, you know, finding ways for connecting, you know, in your city with the people who are there, things like that, goes a very long way in starting your first weeks at school with a bang.
Yeah, that's great advice. And you both have gotten me thinking about a point that, you know, when people are in the application process and trying to decide where to go, and they seek out opinions from friends, colleagues, you know, family, there's often, like, it's usually people, it can be very stressful. And people are often like, really, like, have very strong opinions about, oh, this school is better than that one. You would be crazy to go, you know, so there's like a whole debate that happens. What I find interesting is, I think, Chris, you mentioned this, is that once people get to business school and go through the experience, whether you're at Booth or Yale or Harvard or any of these schools that we're talking about today, and the schools that are, you know, really prominently represented on the Clear Admit site, everyone has a positive experience and is quite successful post MBA. So I think a lot of that, you know, kind of arguing over which school's like slightly better ranked than the other or whatever, that really fades away in a hurry once you join a specific, you know, MBA community. So that's something really great advice for everyone to keep in mind. I just want to remind everyone listening that I'm going to try to summarize this in a nutshell, Chris and Nikhil. But basically, what Juno does is they gather everyone together who's interested, who's got an offer at a top MBA program, and, you know, take all of your info over to the banks and get an amazing rate. So this, again, no brainer. You just go to joinjuno.com and you can sign up with your email address and furnish a little bit more information if you want. And this is, again, just the power of the group, you know, the large purchase. It's a really simple concept, and that's what I love about it. It's incredibly disruptive too, but it's all comes from a very basic concept. So Nikhil and Chris, thank you so much for making time. It's a pleasure to have you guys on the podcast. And I know that our listeners are going to be incredibly grateful for all the money that you guys are going to save them when they go to get their student loans. So thanks so much, both of you, for making time.
Thank you very much for having us again.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. So folks, stay tuned. We have more episodes of the podcast coming. And yeah, once again, Chris and Nikhil, thanks again. And we'll see you all real soon.
Thanks.